This is HPR episode 2435 entitled Server Basics 102. It is hosted by Klaatu and is about 49 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Klaatu talks about SSH configuration on the server you set up in 101.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Everyone, you're listening to Hacker Public Radio. My name is Klaatu. This is part two of my basic server basics mini-series. So in the previous episode, we spoke about what a server is and how it can be anything, but how it really should be something that can actually withstand a lot of users using it. And we talked a little bit about running Linux on it, and we talked about new server versus old server. Old server being basically what we really just call a shell account these days, where you just have people logging in via a terminal and it's all text-based and it's very cool, but not very realistic in the modern world. That's just not what people expect when they say, okay, we need a server for our business now. Now we want clouds and services and apps. We want apps, essentially, is what it boils down to. So in this episode, we're going to talk about setting up that server that hopefully as part of your homework, if you're following along, you set one up already. My recommended setup for this kind of stuff, I mean, there's really anything, but I mean, if you're asking me, then I'm going to say, well, throw Fedora Linux on a computer, and then on top of Fedora Linux, install the virtual manager, the vert manager package, which is a nice GUI front end to something called QEMU with a KVM back end. And all that means is that the virtual machine is looking at your base system and using what it can out of that, and it's virtualizing everything else on top of it. So you've got this kind of hybrid virtualized machine that's a little bit your computer, a little bit made-up computer. And into that virtual machine, you should then install CentOS 7 dot something. I think their latest 7.4, or maybe I'm behind, I don't remember, I haven't looked, but that's what you'll use as a server for these exercises. And I mean, you don't have to do it along with me, obviously. You can just listen and then experiment around with on your own, but if you're completely lost and you have no idea what you should be installing or what you should look at, that's what I'm suggesting to you. So after you've installed the CentOS thing and you've created your root password and your user, it reboots from its installer and you go through the final little setup steps, and then on CentOS I don't think there are. If you did the minimal install, there are you it basically reboots. You get booted to a text terminal, a text console, and you're good to go. That's your CentOS experience. And honestly, that's exactly where we want to be. That's a good place to start. I should mention, however, that that's not necessarily where Red Hat expects you to start. And by that I mean, if you were to call up Red Hat support and ask a question about something that you weren't clear on, they tend to, at least in my experience, tend to assume that you've got a desktop running and that you've got sort of, you know, GNOME Classic Edition, and that you're using GNOME Terminal and things like that. So that's just a point of interest. The minimal install images are kind of handy because they're super small, but they are very minimal. So that's not necessarily the standard, but it is an option. And that's kind of the way I usually go, because at the end of the day, I just don't want a desktop on my server. But that seems to be something that a lot of places kind of really kind of expect you to actually have access to that, interestingly enough. It doesn't matter. It's all running the same stuff in the background anyway. Okay, so whether you've got a desktop up or whether you're just staring at a text console, it's a server, so things are connected to it. Otherwise, how could it be serving something? I mean, right now you're sitting in front of a computer, essentially. I mean, it's a virtual computer. You're sitting at it, so that would be analogous to taking your physical server and plugging in a monitor. So maybe it isn't serving anything because it's a closed-loop system, and that's all it has right now. But more likely, in how things work in big places, is that you've installed the OS, or the OS came pre-installed on it from HP or Dell or whoever your server vendor is. You've turned it on, and then you've SSH'd into that computer, or you've connected to it, however your server vendor has told you to, or whatever your workplace has in place. So if you log into your computer and you do probably as root, but you could do it as your own user and then switch to root, or you could use sudo if you set that up. I think if you marked your user as an admin user, then you are added to the sudo group without having to do anything. You have to type in your password, but I mean, you don't have to physically add yourself to the sudo group. So the command to check if indeed SSH, for instance, is running would just be systemctl status sshd, and that will tell you that, oh yeah, look at that, sshd is active, it is running, it has been running since I turned this computer on 5 minutes ago. Cool. So that's a good thing to know. You are serving something from this server already, which is SSH. And maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, I don't know, but presumably you wanted that open because you have to reach the computer. But that means that it is serving something. So that means that on port 22, so if any computer in the world sends a little message to this computer, even if it's just a random message, if it sends a message to this computer, well, the message wouldn't be random. The fact that it's reaching this computer is random. And it's got that little port 22 text in its little header, and it says, hey, I would like to log in over a secure shell. Then your computer will answer to it, hey, yeah, cool, what's your password? And that right there is kind of an acknowledgement, right? It's saying, number one, yes, I exist. Whether you knew or not that I existed, I do exist. And by the way, yes, I am running SSH. And yes, you may try to log in. So that's a lot of information to a script that wants to then hammer your server with a bunch of usernames and a bunch of passwords in order to try to get in. That's probably not a good thing. So the classic first move would be to sudo edit with some text editor, which, since we don't really have one installed yet, except for that one that I don't use, it would be sudo yum install Jove, because Jove is a small little Emacs clone, or a small little Emac, I guess is what it really is. It's not a clone of Emacs, it just happens to be another Emac. So install that, and then you would want to do sudo Jove, or, you know, Emacs or Vim or whatever you want to use, Nano. Sudo Jove slash etsy slash sshd slash, or is it, yeah, ssh, sorry, slash sshd underscore config. And the first thing you got to do there, absolutely got to do it, is change the port that SSHD is listening on from port 22 to something else. Interestingly, it can be anything else. It doesn't have to be, you can just make stuff up. It is better to use a port at the higher end of the spectrum, just because most of the ones at the lower end are sort of spoken for already. Although, I mean, you could. It's not impossible to collide with known you know, with existing ports, you don't necessarily want to if you can help it, especially with the common, with common known ports that you might think it seems like a really good idea right now, and then realize later that, oh, there's some standard service that you didn't realize you were going to need that you're totally now needing, and it turns out that you redirected your SSH to that port, and now you've got a conflict that you have to resolve. You either have to use a non-standard port for your standard thing, or you have to use, you know, whatever. So you can find out, if you're really into it, you're really curious, you can find a list of all the assigned ports as it exists at the IANA.org site. There's a big long URL. I'm not going to remember to put it in the show notes, but if you do a search for assigned port numbers on the website IANA.org, that's the Internet Assigned Number something Association, then you'll find the list. But again, that's not super, super important right now. It just happens to be there. It happens to exist. The important thing is that you want to get rid of port 22 as a valid place to answer requests for SSH. You just kind of want to put that somewhere else. So, I mean, look, you're not up against people really when you're trying to secure your server. You're up against scripts, and scripts are tireless things, so it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect a script to send out a request across your entire server on every port with a request to SSH in. It's not impossible. It could happen. I don't really see it all that often today, but I mean, that doesn't mean it's not going to happen at some point. But I think typically conventional wisdom right now is that most scripts are designed to hammer port 22, because the real dum-dums out there running servers, not really knowing enough to move SSH, they've just left it on port 22. And if they know, if they've done something stupid like that, chances are they also used some stupid, easy-to-guess string for their SSH password, and they've probably got a user with a certain name, certainly root, and so, you know, there's all these like sort of probabilities that people can kind of figure out, and so if you can figure it out, then you can just have your script hammer on that set of possibilities, and your likelihood of success goes up. Because if you start looking at other ports, then you're dealing with someone who ostensibly knows a little bit more about, well, maybe I am on port 2222 instead of 22. But if I knew to do that, then maybe I also knew to disable root login, and maybe I'm not even using password authentication on my SSH. So, in other words, the defaults, I think, tend to be the ones that you really want to sort of almost get away from. So, to do that, as I said, you are going to edit /etc/ssh/sshd.config, and you're going to, and I don't have an internet connection on my virtual machine as I'm speaking. So if that's happening to you, and you're probably not doing it along with me, maybe you are, I don't know who you are, what you're doing, but if that happens to you and after you've set up a virtual machine, don't forget your basic Unix commands and your knowledge of how Linux works. So if I don't have a DHCP address on my virtual machine, and I feel confident that even if I don't feel confident that I've set up my virtual machine environment correctly, the thing that I would think that I would want to do, oh, Jove doesn't even exist in the repositories for CentOS. Isn't that funny? I feel sure that I've installed it in the past. Maybe it was from some other repository. Anyway, the thing that I would want to do is dh client, and that will probe for a lease. And there we go, IPA 192.168.122.181. Perfect. So now I've got an internet address now. So now I can do a yum search for Jove, and indeed it is not in the repository. I guess that means I'll have to install Emacs. Oh, such a pity. Yep, couldn't be happier. So I'm installing Emacs, which should happen pretty quickly on this fiber connection. So yeah, it happened as I spoke. So what we will do is we will go in there and see where at the very top of the file, practically, it's port 22. So you'll uncomment that and you'll redefine it as port something else, 2222. You could do that. Or you could go higher, 22123, 22456, 22. I mean, it doesn't even have to start with 22. I just keep doing that because at least that's a little bit more memorable for you as the person who's going to have to then use this SSH port. So it doesn't have to be, you know, it can really be anything. So I'm gonna set that to something different. I'm gonna go with 22123. And the other thing that we want to get rid of is the ability for the root user to log in at all. So if you do a search through the document, you should eventually find something called permit root login. And that is commented out and it's set to yes. So I'm going to uncomment it and I'm going to explicitly set it to no. I don't know if that's 100% necessary. I just like to be explicit rather than implicit. So if there's a statement there where I can set it absolutely to no or to yes, depending on, you know, what I need, then that's what I'm going to do. So that's how I do it. The other thing that we would want to do, we want to disable password authentication. Now, we don't want to do that yet because we haven't set up the infrastructure that we need to make that possible. So before we do anything about that eventual goal, we'll save and close. Now, to make those changes actually take place, we'll have to restart this service. And this is a pattern that you're going to get used to. In server maintenance in general, there are several patterns, but one of them is, you know, when you want to start something, you want to start a new service, you'll install the software. Well, in this case, SSH was already installed. Then you'll want to configure it. That's what we're doing right now. And then you'll want to start or restart the service. So just kind of remember that that incantation, that pattern, that ritual is something that you will get very familiar with. And the more you kind of remember that, the easier it becomes to just do that by default. And then there aren't any instances where you're sitting there posting on forums like an idiot, you know, I've installed Nginx web server and nothing's happening. I've checked my firewall rules. I've checked this. I've checked that. Why isn't this working? And someone says, did you start the service? You're like, oh my gosh, no, I didn't. Okay, so we want to avoid that. But anyway, so we've saved, we've closed, and now we theoretically, we believe we want to restart the service. And that depends on how you start services on your system. If you're following my advice and using CentOS as your server distribution, then you would do a system CTL restart SSHD. Now, and don't worry if you got an error. I'm going to address that in a moment. If you're using something else, maybe it's a /etc/rc.d/sshd restart, or I don't know what else something else would use. Well, I do /etc/rc.d/rc.sshd restart. But anyway, the point is you need to learn how to start and restart and check on services. So some incantation that you will learn from your distribution documentation will inform you how to do that. So if you just did that along with me, or if you do this at some point and you get an error back, that'll be too bad. But that is just what happened, actually. So I restarted SSHD and it says failed because a configured resource limit was exceeded. System CTL status sshd.service and journal CTL -XE for details. So looking at logs is always a really good idea, and it's something that server people talk about all the time. They say, did you check your logs? All the time you're going to get that. Now, logs live generally in /var/log, and that's kind of where it gets a little bit squirrely, because you're not really sure which log you should be looking at all the time. And that does, and it actually even varies from distribution to distribution, because log files are malleable. People can assign any application to go to any log file, you know, developers, I mean, or even just someone packaging the software, or yourself if you're installing from, you know, if you're building it yourself, then log files can be anything. So it's sometimes it is difficult to know what to look in. Sometimes it's fairly obvious, like, okay, so it's an SSH thing, so it's probably got something to do with security. So if we did a tail on /var/log/, and then you kind of looked and you said, oh, well, here's one called secure. Maybe that's helpful. And sure enough, error, error, fatal. Okay, so yeah, we've got some errors there. And it's telling us some stuff about permission denied. Wait a minute, how can permission be denied? I'm root. It doesn't make sense. This is bogus. Now, the other thing that you can do if you can't figure out what log to look at is use the journal CTL. When prompted, if it tells you, hey, you can look at journal CTL-XE, that just takes you to the bottom of the file, then you can do that, and it spits out a bunch of information for you. Sometimes it's more information, sometimes it's what you would read in the log anyway. It just kind of depends on which log you looked at. And we get a little bit of a different story here. It's something about error, bind to port 22123 on 0.0.0.0, failed, permission denied, PID file, var run sshd pid was not readable yet after start. So yeah, we've got some problems, but I don't know that it's super obvious as to what that is. But then if you do a Emacs or Jove or Vi or whatever you're doing, /ssh/sshd again, because that's the configuration file that we just recently modified. So maybe we introduced an error or something. Well, no, we didn't. So if you read the comments, and that's always an important thing to do, and it says pretty clearly here in the comments, if you want to change the port on an SE Linux system, you have to tell SE Linux about this change, and it tells you exactly what you need to type in, which is SE manage port dash A dash T SSH underscore port underscore T dash P TCP port number. Cool. So luckily, I've chosen a text editor that has extra features, such as a built-in little shell. So I'm going to do a Control X 2 to split my screen, and then go Control X O to go down to my other screen, and then do an Alt X. I'll just type in shell. Now I've got a shell. And now I'll just copy and paste with my editor that command. Bring it down into here, and I know that my port is 22123, and that should do it. And it didn't do it, because SE manage command is not found. So what that means probably is that I need to do a yum search for SE manage. That really didn't turn up a whole lot. I mean, it shows a libsemanage, but I don't think that's what I'm after. So I'm just going to do a yum search for SE Linux in general. And, oh, that's much better. So we've got SE troubleshoot, we got SE tools, and SE tools console, and that's pretty good. So let's do all of those things. Let's install the SE tools, SE tools console, and SE troubleshoot. And that shouldn't take long either. There we go. And then we'll try SE manage again just to see, dash dash help maybe, just to see if it exists. Yeah, okay, so there it is. So it was in one of those packages. Now, if I didn't want to be quite that haphazard, I could have done a little bit of research with yum to find out exactly what contained SE manage command. But I don't know. It doesn't seem worth my time to go to that trouble when I can just install a bunch of related tools that I'll probably need anyway. So SE manage port, yep, SSH underscore port T TCP TT 1 2 3 2 2 1 2 3, and there we go. So SE Linux is doing some stuff in the background to make this all possible. Okay, it returned nothing, so I'm going to assume success, and now I will close Emacs. I do not need to save anything because I didn't change anything this go. And now we'll try it again. So systemctl restart sshd, and there we go. Now we're now we're getting somewhere. So I didn't get an error that time. So if I do a systemctl status sshd, it tells me that I am running. And it even gives me a little bit of a snippet of the most recent log entries, which was starting OpenSSH server. PID file is not readable yet. Server listening on 22122. So cool. That's a good thing. Another way to learn about what we've just done is with something called netstat, which is a pretty important tool to have, but it's not installed on this minimal image that I installed. That I guess this is the disadvantage of doing a minimal install, is that a lot of the stuff that you would assume to be installed on any Unix type install, they're just not there. But you don't panic, you just have to then kind of look at where it is and install it, and then there you go. So I just did a yum search netstat. It came up with two things, either netsnmp and net-tools, and so I installed net-tools because I happen to know that's where it is. At some point, maybe I'll go over yum in more detail so that there's more of a clue as to how to find out where missing commands actually live, but I think that's outside the scope right now. I kind of assume some Linux familiarity and the ability to look at commands and kind of learn how to use them. I'm more interested in the concepts here. So now that we have netstat, you can do a netstat command, or you could do a help first to see what kind of things that you are interested in utilizing this thing for. And in this case, we want to look at SSH. And we know that SSH is running on port 22123 because we told it to. And so if you do a netstat --help, you can see that there are a lot of options, and you can play around with those, but I'll just bring your attention to the one called --listening. So if you do a netstat --listening, or is it just listen? Listening, then that's a screen full. So we'll just do maybe a pipe that to head, just to keep that sort of a little bit more contained. And only because I happen to know that we're looking at the top. I mean, normally I wouldn't do that if I didn't know where I would be looking. But in this case, I knew that we're looking, so I'm just doing the pipe to head just to keep it easy. So first line right now, at least on this system, is TCP, and it's 0.0.0.0 :22123, and with the state that is in is that it is listening. So we know from that something is listening on port 22123, and that's a good thing to be aware of. We want to be aware of that because even though now we've super secretly and cleverly moved our SSH target from port 22 over to 22123, it's still an open port, essentially. I mean, it's not open, like anybody can just come in and just hang out, but it's a responsive port. If someone throws a message at that port, even if it's chosen at random, they throw a message saying, hey, I'm looking for SSH on this port, and they happen to get a reply from you saying, yes, I am running SSH. What would you like to log in as? Then that's kind of an invitation to come in. If they're a vampire, that's enough. So they may not have the right username, they may not have the right password, but they could certainly try, and if they're a script, all they got is time. They'll just keep trying, unless you do something about it. Okay, so this is a great introduction to something called fail to ban, and I do want to get to that sooner than later, I guess. But before I do, I still want to talk a little bit about the whole SSH thing. And you may have heard some of this before, so I don't want to belabor it, but root is a known value. Everyone knows that every Unix server is going to have an account called root. And it's kind of a problem, and it's something that a lot of servers are now addressing by not enabling the root account, such that there is no root account that can be logged in. And that's a pretty good first step, to be honest. It's because if we're assuming that, okay, we've moved port 22 to 22123, but we're assuming some script is still going to ask at some point, it's going to ask 22123, hey, I'd like to come in. And obviously, if you're going to go to the trouble of trying to get in, you're going to try to get in as root, because that's the easy target. If you win on that one, you've just won the game. So you say, yes, I'd like to get in, and my name is R-O-O-T. And the server says, well, that's not possible, because we don't have an R-O-O-T here. Then you've just left that script with nothing but guesswork. Now it just has to randomly guess what user accounts you might possibly have on your system that would have active shell accounts. Which, I mean, even if they think of something like, you know, something fairly common, like, let's say, Nginx, or Nobody, or whatever, then, or even, honestly, even, like, Git, like, chances are that if you've set those services up, you have disabled an interactive shell login, that you've not allowed for the possibility that someone literally named Nginx, spelled N-G-I-N-X, is going to come along, sign up for a shell account. You know, you're going to give them a shell account, and they're going to SSH in and do productive work. That's just not going to happen. So you set the shell to that user to, like, /bin/false, or, you know, whatever. So that's a great thing to do. The other thing that you can do for SSH is just tell it straight out, look, if anyone says that they're root, do not let them log in, even if they have the right password, because it's just not going to ever happen. So we already did this, but you would set in /etc/ssh/sshd config that permitting the root login is set to no. So that's great. The other thing that we can do related to this is not enable password authorization at all for anyone. That seems really odd, but it is possible. And in fact, it's a very good idea. The way we do it is we use SSH keys instead. So when you are trying to log into a server, rather than using a password to get into that server, you simply have a private key file on your computer that you're at, and you have the public key version of that file over on the server, and if those two key files match up, then you're allowed in. And if they don't, then you are not allowed in. And in theory, you're the only person on Earth with that private key, the private key file that matches that particular public key. So I've got an IP address here of SSH 192.168. .122.181. That's my virtual machine address. So if I do an SSH space -p 22123, CLAT2 at, and the big long IP address I just gave, and once again, failure. So this can be frustrating, you know. You think, okay, well, I had it, and now it's not working. Well, this is the beauty of CentOS, really, honestly. It comes by default with a firewall in place. So if you do a systemctl status firewall D, then you see that, hey, there is an active running firewall happening. And so when you try to SSH into your server from the outside, certainly to a non-standard port, I mean, SSH might be let through the firewall, but SSH on 22123, there's no way. So that's a great thing. This is a bonus. It doesn't feel like a bonus because it's resulting in total and utter failure. That's okay. We can fix this. So firewall D is a front end to, I would say, traditional IP tables. IP tables is the firewall used on a very low level on a Linux system. There are similar things on BSD, IPFW, PF. They all work differently, and they have different syntax. All the same basic concept, of course. It's a firewall, so you've got signals that you let in, and you have signals that you let out, and everything else you disallow. Now, the danger with firewalls is that you can easily lock yourself out very quickly with, like, one command. You can lock yourself out of your own server because you forgot to open some port, and then you started up the firewall, and suddenly your connection with that server is severed. So do be careful when messing around with firewalls. Always make sure that you are not accidentally severing your connection with that server. Now, since we are physically hooked up to this virtual server right now, we're not really in danger of that. And you can play around with that in your own spare time if you ever want to, because it is a good thing to sort of get to know and get to hate, because it has happened to everyone at some point. We have all, at the beginning of our careers, have been logging into we've logged into a server, and we think everything's fine, and we swap the port from SSH for SSHD from the default to the non-default. So we've got this hole in our firewall that let us through for port 22. But then we move port 22. We say, yeah, we don't want that there. So we put that over there. There's no hole there in the firewall, so we no longer have that connection. And we throw up the firewall, and maybe it retains. The worst time is that when it retains the connection that already exists. That's a pretty common rule in IP tables. It's like, hey, if an established connection is there, continue to allow it. But then when you log out and try to log back in, you find, oh my gosh, I can't reach it anymore. What happened? And you have no idea because when you threw the firewall up, it didn't appear. It seemed like everything was right. And it turns out that yes, you had a temporary pass because you were already connected. But that doesn't mean that you can get back in. So be careful with that is what I'm trying to say. And we're physically connected to this thing right now, so it's not really a danger. So what we will do though is we'll invoke firewall d, or actually it's firewall dash cmd, firewall command. Why it's not firewall CTL, like system CTL and a bunch of other CTLs, but pulse, I think, what is it, pavu CTL? I don't know. I don't know why it's not something sensible like that. I alias it to fc anyway. So firewall dash cmd. Is it works differently than IP tables, and that's actually okay because IP tables can get pretty complex. I mean, firewall command honestly can get pretty complex too, but whether or not you need to learn IP tables, it doesn't really. I'm not convinced. I kind of hesitated against firewall D when I first learned about it because I'd kind of already started learning IP tables, and I thought, geez, do I really want to relearn a different firewall set of commands? And just in the interest of integration, it's actually fine to just use firewall d. And I think on the Ubuntu flavors and the Debian stuff, I think they opt mostly for UFW possibly. So same back end IP tables, a different front end. It's kind of up to you. And I tend on In this sense, I tend to just default to whatever the system wants me to do, which I know that sounds absolutely disgusting. It's like, oh, you have to forge your own way. But in this case, actually, I just go with integration because that way, the most important thing for a server maintenance, I think, or one of the most important things when you're doing server work is that all of the work that you do survives a reboot. That's the most important thing because if it doesn't survive a reboot, that's when you get the that's when you have to go in to this to actually be physically present at the server farm. Because if it survives a reboot, then worst case scenario, power outage, whatever, it gets power back comes back on, the server comes back up, and everything's already working again. You don't have to go in. You get the call, hey, there's a power outage. You can't do anything about that, so you go back to sleep. And then you get the notification that the server's back online, and you're thinking, cool, I guess the power came back on, the server rebooted like it was supposed to, and everything came back up. If you don't have that, then you're not going to have any peace of mind when the server goes down. That's the problem. So I like it to be integrated such that I don't have to worry. Did the firewall come back up when the server rebooted? Well, of course it did. It's all tied together and in a neat little package. Everything's going to start back up. So firewall D has that advantage of kind of being tied into the system D or the init system, and so it'll just come right back up when the server comes back on. The command to add a rule in firewall command is firewall dash cmd dash dash space dash dash zone dash equals public, because that's the default zone for firewall D. And there are a couple of different zones, but the public one I tend to just kind of stick with. There are theoretically better ones, but public I'm actually pretty comfortable with. And then space dash dash add dash port equals 22123 slash TCP. So if you try to add a port, then it won't necessarily know what kind of traffic you want to allow in. So you have to tell it specifically, I want to add, you know, I want to allow TCP traffic in this case on this port. There are other ways to add rules, like you could define it by saying dash dash add dash service equals SSH. But again, as I said, I think earlier in this very episode, I like to be explicit when I can be. So it's nice to have human readable friendly names like SSH and stuff like that. But I would rather make sure that we all know what we're talking about. And in this case, I want this port to be open for this protocol, and that's what I want. Now, all that did was add that rule to the current running state of the firewall. So if it's something that we want to have happen all the time, we need to also add the dash dash permanent flag, and that adds it to, you know, that saves it to the configuration file. And there are ways to go back in there, and we could tell it, well, this friendly name SSH actually maps to 22123, so I'm gonna keep using the friendly name. But this is that's the basics right there, and I'm not gonna, again, the specifics of the commands are less important to me than the conceptual stuff. Okay, so now that we've added that port to our firewall, in theory, if we go back to a terminal on our local computer outside of our virtual machine. And of course, to get the IP address again, it would just be IP space A, and that tells you that ETH 0 is this 192 address. And then I'll go back out to my local machine, and I'll do an SSH-P22123, CLAT2 at the IP address, and sure enough, it tells me that this is a machine, and here's its ECDSA key fingerprint. Am I sure that I want to continue? Yes. Type in my single letter password that I put in for myself to make this easy. And there we are. We're in the server. And we could type host name. And there, that was very helpful because I didn't define one, so it's localhost.localdomain. But anyway, I know that it's not my local computer. It is my virtual machine. So now we've SSH'd into our virtual server from our laptop or whatever you're using, just like you would if that was a real server. So from here on out, I guess we might as well just keep using the SSH connection, because that's probably how you're going to be interacting with this thing normally. So you can exit out of that. We don't really want to be SSH'd in right now, to be honest. So I'll exit out of that, but we have confirmation now that we can reach the server via SSH. So now what we're going to do is put our SSH key over on the server, our public key. So you can do that with a little shell script called ssh-copy-id. And on most Linux distributions that I use, well, all that I use on a daily basis, it comes pre-installed. So I just type in ssh-copy-id. If you don't have it installed, you can look around for it and see if it's available for your distribution. I think it might also be on the open SSH site somewhere. And if not, you can do it manually. It's not actually that hard. This just happens to make it easy. So do an SSH copy ID, and then you do the whatever, clat2.at192.168, you know, the destination, the place that you're SSHing into. And then I think you also need, if I'm recalling correctly, the dash P22123. And yeah, it looks like it has detected me. It has gone to the correct port. It is offering to copy the keys to the server. So I'm typing in my password, and it says that we're all good. It says that should work. So now if I just change this to SSH, CLAT2 at that IP address at that port, I'm just logged in. It didn't even ask me for my password. It's as simple as that. Now, if you look at what that did on your server side, you'll see that you've got an ls-a. Well, if you do an ls-a, so I've just SSH'd in -a, and I see that there's a new folder here, and it's called .ssh. And then if you look in .ssh, you'll see that there's one file there called authorized keys. Okay, so now, why don't you do it at cat tilde slash .ssh slash authorized keys, and you see that there's this big, long, ugly sort of string thing looking at the in the authorized keys, and it identifies itself as an ssh-rsa, big long string, and then clat2 at this computer host name. Cool. So that's all it did. The SSH copy ID just took my public key, the one that's okay to share, and it just put it into the authorized keys file on the server. So now anytime, as we've already seen, that I do an SSH clat2 at that IP address at that port, SSH, what I'm offering it is my private key, I'm holding up my private key, and then the SSH responds and holds up the public key. And if they fit together, I'm in. And if they don't, then I am not. And the likelihood of some random script kiddie out there having a copy of my personal private key that happens to go with this server is pretty slim, especially since I can generate as many private keys as I want. I could have a different private key for every server that I use. And the trick to that is simply using SSH -i for identity. And then you can tell it, hey, okay, I'm SSHing into this virtual machine. Let's call it, Bobcat. So if we know that we're doing that, maybe I generate a special SSH key just for that. And so then I can do an SSH -p for the port 22123, and then -i for identity file, and I'll point it to .ssh. Let's say I called it bobcat underscore RSA. No pub, because I want to point it at my private key. And then clat2 at, and then the big long IP address. Hit return. And I'm in. So you can have lots of different keys for, you can have one per server if you want. It's just the likelihood of someone having copies of all your private keys are lower than the likelihood of a script trying a million times to get into your server and actually hitting upon the right combination of username and password. Now the last thing we need to do then in this process is to go back as root. So there I go, and then go back into slash etsy slash ssh slash sshd config and find that password authentication rule, which is on line 77-ish, and I'll uncomment it. Password authentication right now is set to yes. I'm going to set it to no. And then remember, after you configure, what do you do? Yeah, you restart the service. So we'll do systemctl restart sshd. Now it's restarted, and now I'm going to exit. I'm going to crossing my fingers, and I'm going to try to SSH back in with no password involved, and yes, I'm in. So we have just, now if we were to switch users and try to SSH in, well, here, I'll do it right now. So let's say that I SSH as root, and it says permission denied. It doesn't even ask me for, it doesn't do anything. It's just permission denied. How about if I do SSH as HPR denied? How about git denied? So there's no interactivity there. It's just denial of service, and that's what we want. Okay, so this has been a little bit of an introduction to SSH. It's been a pretty good introduction to SSH. It's been a little bit of an introduction to firewall. And now I think we should probably talk about fail to ban, which someone else has covered in Hacker Public Radio history. I think that's how I learned about it, actually. But we'll do that another time, because this episode has gone on for a longer time than I sort of realized it would. So next episode, we'll talk about fail to ban. It's a great little application, takes almost no effort to set up, and it is well worth setting up. So we'll get to that next time. Until then, let's say your homework is to create some SSH keys and practice logging into your virtual server over SSH and reading up on FirewallD over at firewalld.org. Have a good time with that. See you next time.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.